The Morning Show with Errol Lewis.
8:19 in the morning and 28 degrees in Midtown Manhattan. With the wind chill, it feels like 15 degrees out there. We're going up to a high of 34 degrees today, folks. Log on to WWRL1600.com. Click on Errol's blog. I've been posting items all morning. The latest item I posted was an extraordinarily tough visionary statement, I'd even call it, from the second most powerful man in New York State government. Sheldon Silver says now is the time to finally push for reform of the harsh Rockefeller drug laws. He's joining us now to tell us more about it. Good morning, Mr. Speaker.
Good morning. Delighted to be with you.
Are you down here or are you up in Albany?
I'm down here. I came down yesterday. We have a big hearing this morning on the progress of the World Trade Center site and what the Port Authority, the MTA, the LMDC, and everybody plans to do to keep it on a timeline.
So that's an. I know that's been an exercise in frustration. We'll probably talk about that another time. I want to bring up. I was very surprised, I guess, to see a statement from your office, and I know that your position probably hasn't changed on this, but I was surprised to see such a forceful statement calling the entire war on drugs a massive failure, calling on your fellow legislators to finally either do away with or completely rewrite and reform the Rockefeller drug laws. What brought that about?
Well, Errol, I was chair of the Codes Committee 14 years ago, so this is not new for me. And in the Assembly, we have a champion of reform of Rockefeller drug laws in Jeff Aubrey of Queens, who's chairman of our Corrections Committee. So I'm very familiar with this, and people don't know that a long time ago, before I was in the legislature, I spent 5 years in the courts of this state working in the courts, three of them in the first centralized narcotics part. So I have firsthand experience in seeing the law, how it is applied, how it isn't applied, and how the process works. And I believe that the Rockefeller drug laws have outlived any usefulness that they've had. And the reality is that they don't have any usefulness today, that we have to give judges discretion, that when we have meaningful drug treatment alternatives to mandatory incarceration and mandatory life sentences, that we produce a generation that gets back on track in many instances and can live as productive citizens. Those that get into prison, those that serve life sentences or, you know, maximum life sentences with mandatory minimums, they're lost to society forever. They are not productive. They are constant recidivists. And that's what we have to avoid. And by the way, Errol,
yes,
we save a ton of money when we can rehabilitate a drug addict rather than keep incarcerated.
Oh, sure, sure. I was looking at some numbers, and I think the average cost of a stay in prison for a year in New York is over $36,000, and drug treatment can be as cheap as, you know, a couple of $1,000s. But up until now, you've run into opposition first with a Republican governor. Well, that hurdle has been crossed, and a Republican-dominated state Senate, and that has changed. So is that the change that will now enable some reforms to be legislated this year?
Well, that's what I think is the reason that this is the year to see that we can make that change. This is the year when we can get a fair hearing of the issues. This is the year I believe that there is an openness to change. I think David Patterson, prior to being governor, was very much an advocate for this. I think Eric Schneiderman, who now chairs the Senate Codes Committee, which is the Criminal Justice Committee in the Senate, has been someone who has talked about it. And Jeff Aubrey has put a plan out there, and I think we can come to an agreement on doing modifications. In 2004, with Governor Pataki, with the Republican Senate, we made some very modest changes to the mandatory provisions, the mandatory life sentences. We enhanced the ability to use some drug treatment alternatives, although, I mean, the big killer in that one was you needed a district attorney's consent, which is something that's been withheld all too often. But with that, it's estimated that over the last 5 years, among other things, we've saved about $100 million. That's $100 million that can go to police officers on street corners, additional or smaller size classrooms, or hospital emergency rooms, or higher education programs. That's what we need in order. We have to use our money widely. It's unfair. It's applied unfairly. You know, the statistics show that between African-Americans, whites, and Hispanics, there's roughly a 7 to 8% drug use.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, 90% of the people in state prison for drug offenses are African-American or Latino. The statistics show that 83% of inmates in New York have an identified substance abuse need. And Rockefeller drug laws are not going to change that. And as you said, it runs us anywhere from $30,000 to $40,000 a year to keep someone in prison. We've had programs, successful program, Kings County, run with the district attorney very successfully. Joe Hines.
Yeah, you know, I bumped into him just last night, as a matter of fact, and he was telling me about it. And he's looking for some additional funding from the feds to increase that. Let me ask you this, though. I don't want to let you get away without asking about some of the political turmoil that's been going on in the Capitol lately. You stood at the side of our new junior senator, Kirsten Gillibrand, as she was being announced by the governor the other day. She holds some positions that run counter to some of what you've been about. And in particular, I'm talking about gun control. What do you expect to see happen as we try to move forward and speak with one voice, hopefully, as a state, when it comes to regulating illegal firearms?
I think what happens generally with people as they move up the political ladder, they start in a small district, they reflect the people in their district, their views in the district. As they enlarge the number of people that they represent, in this case, Kirsten Gillibrand going from a congressional district, an overwhelmingly Republican congressional district, into representing the people of the state of New York, I think you will see her positions modified to reflect the people that she represents. If it doesn't, clearly she won't be reelected. The people will not be happy with her positions and will look for somebody else for her to represent, to represent them. I think what you're going to see is Kirsten Gillibrand realizing and traveling around the state and determining who she represents, what their position is on immigration, which I believe in New York is overwhelmingly much more liberal than her previous positions on gun control. I think she didn't represent any, you know, major cities like Buffalo, Rochester, New York City, which have experienced the scourge of illicit guns coming in. And as she sees the devastation, she's going to have to modify and change her position, or the people will reject her. I think she realizes that. And that's a natural occurrence among people as they move up the political ladder. Patterson hasn't been different.
Well, I was going to say the adjunct to that is the, you know, normally I don't, you know, I don't get into the inside baseball and the back and forth, but sometimes it reaches a point where it actually can harm a leader in this state and to start to have repercussions that we all have to take note of. Is David Patterson at that point as far as all of this back and forth about who said what to and about Caroline Kennedy?
Look, I think picking the senator was rather a blip on the entire radar screen. David Patterson's going to be judged on how we come through this fiscal crisis, what we get in a stimulus package from Washington, how we can use the resources we get to respond to the needs of the people of this state, how we do a budget on time in this state despite a shortfall of $15 billion. That's what's going to ultimately make a determination on David Patterson's stewardship of this state, and that's what the people are going to decide. This is going to be, you know, a piece of history that's, you know, one day or one week in a rather difficult job as governor of the state
well,
of New York.
Speaking of stewardship, you've been through many ups and downs, through many budgets of surplus and deficit. Is this the worst or toughest budget you've ever seen?
It's the toughest in terms of the failure to have the resources that are necessary to provide for the people of the state of New York. Hopefully, it's just we can, with the new president and the great hope that he offers, that we can come out of this economic downturn and he can address some of the needs that we have been hoping for during all the Bush years that have been ignored, and that is educating children, providing health care. That's what's the important thing.
What's the single biggest expense cut or revenue enhancer that you are going to be arguing for to help close the gap?
Well, I think let's as far as expense cuts are concerned, you've got to recognize that New York State spends more than 50% on its budget on health care and education. We have a $15 billion deficit, and I believe that all three are going to be necessary. We're going to have federal money. We're going to have to do revenue enhancers, and I believe we should do broad-based revenue enhancers rather than pick and choose. You're going to pay an extra $5 to go to a park. You're going to pay an extra $50 to register your car. Let's just pay an extra 1% state income tax for people who can afford it, or something of that nature. Let the people who can afford it, if not on a permanent basis, certainly on a temporary basis, pay it. We ought to look on a permanent basis to restructure our income taxes so that people who make $50,000 aren't paying the same tax rate that people are paying are making $1 million a year. Mm. And that's currently the status of New York. There's no elasticity. There's no range between the lowest taxpayers and the highest taxpayers in terms of the rate of tax that they pay.
The so-called millionaire's tax, which you indirectly just referenced, is that something you think will come up for a vote? Are you in favor of that?
Well, it has come up for a vote. The New York State Assembly has passed it. I have voted for it. Mm-hmm. I believe in letting people who can afford to pay a little bit more. I think that's important to us.
Mm-hmm. And you have no fears that it'll drive business or individuals out of the state?
I can only quote Mayor Mike Bloomberg when he said he has a lot of friends in those categories. Not one of them has left town because we raise the tax, so they pay a little more taxes. New York is unique. New York is New York, and they are going to stay here because all of what New York has to offer.
Okay, we're past our allotted time. Let me just ask you, do you think we're going to bring this in on time?
I do think we're going to bring it in on time. What's unique about this is, through my years of experience, when there's extra money, there's a big fight about how to spend it. Somehow, this kind of year, if you don't close the budget, you always think there'll be less money and you'll have to make bigger cuts if you prolong the debate. So I think we'll bring it in on time.
Okay. Look, thank you for your time. Best of luck with what I know is going to be a tough job. And we will keep in touch with you and monitor both your work on the Rockefeller drug law reform and the budget as a whole. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Errol.
Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. Oh, well, we got him for a little bit of time there. Told us quite a lot. What do you think? 212-868-0975. Could this be the year we finally get reform on Rockefeller drug laws? 8:33 in the morning. We'll be right back after traffic with Dale Shaw.